This morning, the topic, archaeology, I wanted to title it this way because, like so many other avenues of apologetics, what's awesome is people do a lot of research and great new things come out, but then camps get formed and people can polarize. So, just like in so many other things, forgiveness may be one of the most important things for us to understand the topic, whatever topic we're in. Just like we do getting through the day in life, you know, using forgiveness so that we can have a good attitude around other people. Same thing with our intellectual life. Okay, so let's see what happens. Okay, challenging the consensus view. Here's an area where we see that it has to occur. My oldest daughter at 16, I know she's going to be going to school. We were talking about it a little while ago. And, you know, the consensus view in university sometimes is scary to us. Oh, you know, what is going to be taught? And so, it has to be done. But then we run the risk of, going way out on the outskirts where, how do you know if you're on a rabbit trail or if it's going to be productive? So it is necessary. And for archaeology, some things I found on RTB site were very helpful. So Krista Bontrager offers some tips, and I gave some links where you can go. A couple that deal with recent documentaries and other avenues, and I can even try one out just to see what it's like on this computer. Let's try one, see if it works. If it doesn't work here, you might try it at home. On reasons.org, it's easy just to type in keywords, and you can kind of see what topics have been addressed besides the whatever astronomy one was spoken of that day. And it looks like it's going slow right now, so I'll just give up on that.
Dean, did you take the biblical archaeology thing from...
I saw that it was offered. How long ago?
It's been a few years.
Yeah, that one looks interesting.
Yeah, it's worth taking.
What I found is there's so many resources to help in various areas on the site. Resources where you're directed to other resources and then other resources. And so here I'm going to just highlight some just quick ones that you go to immediately, and then there could be, you know, day after day a follow-up for anyone who's interested
in this
topic.
I subscribe to that magazine. I don't know if you're going to talk about it. It's a great magazine, Biblical Archaeology Review. Mm-hmm. And then there's an archaeology club that Mark goes to and Valerie, the first of the month in Monrovia. So there's some ways we can get into this subject, right? Yeah.
Awesome. Biblical Archaeology Review. Let's see. So here's one I found on biblicalarchaeology.com, which is the URL for Biblical Archaeology Review. And I like this one because archaeology as an apologetic. 53 people in the Bible have been confirmed. Okay, so whenever we read Kings, 1 Kings or 2 Kings, and there's king after king mentioned places, and it's really hard to tell. Like, where and when are all these guys? Especially if you're listening on tape, and it just keeps going. And so you can get the moral lessons, and then wonder, are these real people? You know, who were they? And one way that's easy as is going into Wikipedia and typing stuff in, and you get tons of data, and you can see many people have researched this. But here's one that was recommended. So I picked a few out. In Egypt, Shishak is the first on the list, and also quite old. That looks like the 10th century. Well, I mean, how many years ago is that?
3,000.
And so, to even find any evidence of these people, maybe it has to be the desert. In most areas, like here and the Mediterranean in general, things are going to decompose. Papyrus, leather, this just doesn't last. So I guess Egypt is lucky for being right in such an arid area. And they have a river for food, but it's still an extremely arid area. And so Egypt is a great example. Let's look at Judah. All right. The oldest, or the most impressive I saw, David, that there's mention of David in the archaeological finds. And we've heard it in this class before, where here's an 11th and 10th century king, one of the biggest names we have, and there's solid evidence of his name inscribed in another country's reference to him. And then same with the northern kingdom of Israel, Omri, King Ahab, he's probably one of the biggest that we would recognize because the story is so colorful with him and the prophets. And there's the 9th century. So just going to this first site, there's not just some finds that are found, but there's many scholars of different areas that are looking into it in great detail. So what made me think of looking into this was when Pete gave a presentation, and we also looked at the presentation in one of the Bible studies, and it very interesting, where you have archaeologists who can put together from their own research and digs such amazing views of an ancient world thousands of years ago. And then you wonder, okay, so how does this fit with the other guys that I know and the other books that I've read? And then pretty soon you're like, wow, I'd have to spend years studying this, and you know, I got a job and kids, and what am I going to do?
Just one point on the previous slide. You said it was BibleArchaeology.com. Actually, the small words there say .org. Just for people, they wrote down what you said.
Biblical archaeology.
So yeah, if you type in Biblical Archaeology Review, then BiblicalArchaeology.org will come up. And there is, let's see if that one works. There's also, there's a daily blog, and that will highlight. Ah, there it is. And so,
list of 53 people?
Oh yeah, in great detail too. Yeah, so what Doug mentions is if you have, when you're sharing stories that are meaningful to us and we've been in the Psalms or wherever and, well, yeah, I think King David wrote this. And they're like, come on, these are just stories fabricated by somebody around Christ time. Here is one amazing resource.
And get away with that, yeah.
And a resource where you can see each of the 53 people, and there's a book that of course was published that he'll give references to reviews and other areas that have helped him figure it out. And if I could figure out how to scroll down it, I would, but I can't. All right. So I did a little searching and found thousands, you know, they try to count them. It's hard to count names because there's derivative names, you know, son of so-and-so. But, you know, it's in the thousands. You know, is it 1,000, 2,000? In this picture where they're digging at Shiloh, if I could read that, it's kind of small. They came up with a new technique, and it's washing artifacts. So instead of just going through it dry and finding extremely small stuff, they wash it with water as well. So they're finding, like, tiny beads. And so sometimes, like, the signet rings or the clay that's been inscribed in the rings, it's already small. And they're looking for, like, little engravings to or items that people were using in their living life. And a lot of them are broken down, even smaller than that.
Is the same process as panning for gold?
Exactly. I try to get to that in a later slide where, like in the book of Job, there's treasures to be found. I think it's really fruitful. Okay. Get to my presenter notes here so I can... Okay, back a slide. Any time that there's new discoveries and people doubt it at first, and then other people critique it, and okay, yeah, that really is, you know, Ahab or Yehu depicted on this stone from so long ago, and then more time goes by, and then people critique it even further, and at some point you get the skepticism, and so, but still, you can kind of add up and look, hey, people are arguing whether an exodus occurred, you know, in the 13th or the 15th century, fine. And then people argue, hey, is there a flood? You know, hey, is there... But when we're talking in the last, you know, the 10 centuries before Christ, there's overwhelming evidence of so many characters in the Bible. I think it helps our apologetic when we bring one of them up. Yes?
Could you pick, say, David, for example, or some other general? Do you have any... information that you give us on, say, a particular character or two, just kind of go through and tell me, why should I believe that David exists? What kind of evidence do we have? It doesn't have to be David or some other character.
Okay, so the question, if somebody asked me, well, how can you say that this guy David exists? I personally start with, say the depths of the Psalms. For me, that's a bigger truth. Like, wow, like this isn't some old poetry that somebody hacked together. You know, this is world class. It's top of the line. So, seeing real struggles, that means there's a real man behind it. And then the detail of, well, who is the real man? Where was he? What nationality? Then it's time for archaeology. Let's see, is it, you know, are they really in the Near East? Are they really King David, who had a son, King Solomon? Then I think it's a job for archaeology to start narrowing down the relationships of the different kings and the exact cities and the exact dates. But personally, it's, when my brother-in-law asked me recently, you know, I'm not going to believe something written by some pseudonymous person, you know, you know, I had to say, yeah, I'm already starting with high confidence in the Psalms and then move on from there.
Okay, I understand that we believe that David wrote the Psalms, but what's missing from my knowledge is in addition to what's written, what's the archaeological data that supports the existence of David? Israel.
And when you hear that question in academia, it's a great question. And so some of the things just in, this is very little research because this is just on some spare time I have. Reading different levels of skepticism, okay? So you have some people like me who just say, I already believe all this, but I'm going to look at archaeology just to fill in the dates and the names. And then going to where, let's say you're an academic and you can't just rely on your personal faith because you have to present a paper. I'll just say the middle, where most teachers might find themselves. And then all the way over to a skeptical camp that's doubting that, you know, King David and Solomon really had much of a kingship at all. So yeah, there's guys out there like that, and they'll present, hey, we're not finding a huge Babylon, so how could this have been, you know, a real kingdom? And in the little research I came across, I was surprised to see people not noticing what happens in an ordinary course of a growing country. So if you looked at the U.S. in 1770, and you're like, okay, here's some farmers and colonists, but it's not a nation. But then all of a sudden, you know, when we fight for our independence and put our own laws on paper, 1776, and then we have our constitution, and then, whoa, look at this great nation. So it happens slowly, even for modern times. I can imagine in 10 centuries before Christ, the same things going on there. And that was the most elucidating evidence for me in that area. Hey, John in the back, yeah.
Let me back you up on Psalm. Psalm 119 is divided into a large number of paragraphs going down through the Hebrew alphabet.
Psalm 119 is acrostic.
No problem. A couple of those letters are in the wrong order. It's a canonical order. And people pointed that, said, well, you know, it's a late edition or some explanation. Whoever wrote that. When they found an ostraca in one of the excavations, an ostraca made a piece of broken pottery, probably a kid was learning the alphabet and practiced it, and son of a gun came out with the same order as that swamp, and it was dated about the same period. So a small point, but it's a point where archaeology supports the legitimacy of the
Yeah, so that Psalm 119... written 3,000 years ago, and then sometime in the last century or two, we come across a shard of pottery, and it backs up the alphabetical order of that psalm. Yeah, that's amazing.
And the order has since changed, so, you know, once the change came, you know, you'd have a modern order.
Mark.
Just to
add a little bit to what you're saying. The archaeology... The Bible was believed pretty much up until around after the 1850s, after Darwin came out with his theory. And then the higher critics came along from Germany, and then others joined in. And they pretty soon the minimalists came along in the 1900s, and they said that the Bible had no credibility. So since then, they've relied on archaeology a lot. And so every time they find something with a name on it, and there's no contradiction so far, but it supports the Bible. For instance, David, there's one thing that's been found. The Tel Dan Stela, there's several ways to say that. It's dated back to around 750 BC, after David, but it's still, it's before the Babylon captivity. And so it's the only thing with David's name on it. And it says, I think it says something about the house of David is wrecked and gone, you know, which was a lie, of course. It was
propaganda. Stealing,
yeah, it was printed by someone who tried to conquer Judah.
But it's printed by another nation, which gives it the
It gives it more credibility.
Yeah.
So all those names that Dean's got up there, they found archaeological evidence with those names on it. And those are what are accepted. And every year, a few more names are found. And added.
Right.
And otherwise, don't believe it. That's what the minimalists and higher critics would tell you. Don't believe what the Bible says. We've got to find the archaeology record.
And we are finding the archaeological record. And so my point in putting this up here, this is a tiny snapshot of the 53 names, but just that for your perusal, anytime, you know, it's fun to go there and see what's coming out. And I'm gonna continue on a couple slides, and then we're going to open up at that point a little bit more, because I just want to get...
He's been holding his hand up a long time.
And what we yes,
okay.
And here's another resource. I want to go through, in general, what the resources are, and then see what the questions. Okay. Here's for me, it's easier to listen to podcasts, you know, or just tape recording, 15 minutes to give a half hour of a discussion, and. There was even one on the documentary we saw in class not long ago. And it's like, okay, you're driving and you can hear another side of the story. It's awesome. There's so many resources. And this one, so it's numbered 1524 on Radio Scribe, hosted by Gordon Grovier. So you can see there's quite a few that you could listen to. So if there's an area that is of interest,
tpts.info.
Yeah, and just typing Radio Scribe is a way to get there. But yeah, tbts.info is a site where they just store the recordings. So just like you could go to reasons.org and find this class having a stash of info, and over on top of all of reasons.org info, there's other guys who have specialized. And what's neat about this is you're getting interviews with archaeologists who are looking at finds that... You know, they every time something's dug up, it can be very exciting, you know, when a shard of pottery is found and a name. Wow, is this really that king, or is this that city that it was found in that location? And it allows some discussion at the very beginning of a find, and then you could let it sit for a little while. Okay, you only invested 15 minutes, and if you hear about it again in a year, that it caused a whole book to be written, now you're ready to read the book and find out the import of the whole idea. And it's great. If you're driving and you can't read a book, you just listen to it. Okay. Precision versus accuracy. What is the picture for those looking?
Salton Sea.
Dead Sea.
Yeah.
But we do have a Salton Sea right over our hill. Same thing. The water goes down and evaporates out. You end up with a ton of salt. And it is amazing when you read these stories, and some things are easy to find. That's why I like this picture. You know, if you do have the chance to go to Europe and the Mediterranean and some of these things, you can see on a grand scale, oh, this is what that story, this is the location. Okay, so the digs are giving us more context from the Bible stories. Just like in modern times, we mine the layers of teachings and worldviews through history. As much as we have the earth for minerals. And, you know, the preaching on Job, it reminds me of, you know, all the animals we have access to and all the layers of the earth where oil is pumped out of the ground and we're using so many resources. It's the same thing, though, with academia. I mean, if we wrestle with all the ideas that are coming out today, how about the last century and the century before that? You know, how about the medieval times? What was important to them? What were the issues in the time of Christ? They were thinking about these same issues 500 years before Christ and in the time of David. This I wanted to put out there just for us being humble. You know, hey, how do you forgive other people? And if they have a different view than you, wow. Let's realize how our view is just one representative sample of the possibles that we have access to even read a book on.
Are you going to talk about YouTube at all?
Okay, so yeah, YouTube was brought up. When we want to go to YouTube, it seems like an awesome resource because it's so easy, but we have to be careful because who's giving the YouTube presentation?
Yeah.
Everybody.
And So there you go. If you recognize the person and then you say, hey, I know that person and I know the organization that supports them, and then, yeah, invest an hour. But it's difficult, the layout of YouTube. You'll be given suggestions instead of the other way around where the organization or a friend says, hey, here you go. Here's one. Okay, great, there's one. But then you're fed these ones, and you're not given the authority behind them unless you recognize their name or the institution that helped them publish it. So, yeah, maybe it would be better if we were, you know, 300 years ago where if you wanted to be published, you needed an institution that was going to publish your work.
And so you're saying there's no accountability with YouTube that much yet?
Okay. We have to put the accountability in ourselves.
Like and
so it's not just our children. Okay, what do we do with our children on YouTube? It's ourselves. We have to monitor what ideas we're getting because the consensus sometimes needs to be challenged. But wow, that is something that requires a great deal of timidity. You know, intellectual honesty, intellectual being humble and realizing, hey, maybe this is something that I can't figure out within my 1 hour I'm willing to spend. So people over the millennia, some of them have had a greater understanding than us today. Yeah, would you agree or not?
Say it again.
People, someone living 1,000 years ago, can they understand Scripture better than us?
Well, they were closer to the event, but I don't know. We have a lot of resources now.
We have a lot of resources.
Yeah.
So then it seems like we should understand Scripture way better than anyone living before us.
Yeah. They were there?
Okay, so if from Pasadena and Sierra Madre, let's say there's 700,000 people, how far would you have to travel to get like a radius of 1 mile, 2 miles, 3 miles?
To get that many people?
Yeah, to get 700,000. And we know you don't have to go very far, and 7 or 10 million people are in the LA area. So, you know, it's not greater than 20-mile radius. So if you look at one group, 700,000 people, how many of those are on Earth today? 700 times what is 7 billion? 10,000. There's 10,000 of those groups. So just to give us, wow, that's a lot of people discussing and spreading the gospel in different ways, in different countries, and in different locations that you have a connection with. Okay, now, here's another question. Although many sites have been excavated over the last couple hundred years, how much of the backstory do we know compared to Job? Because that's another one I want to bring up. Hey, our knowledge. We have so many resources. I can have like a few different translations of the Bible right here. And we can do searches by words in different languages. But the backstory. I really like that about the title of the book. I actually have it in the closet. Here, let me get it because I'm going to reference one of the pages. Oh, here it is right here. Hidden Treasures in the Book of Job.
What do you mean by backstory? You mean the true story, what really went on? Or the background? Or what do you mean by backstory?
Yeah, the true story that really went on, how was it framed? So we know the very beginning and the very end of Job. As a reader of the book, we can see what's going on. You know, in the courts of heaven or wherever this is taking place. But Job himself, we see, doesn't get to see that. You know, it's clear to us he doesn't see that. And today, when we, even if we have archaeological resources and scientific resources from so many different specializations, we're still going to know the backstory about as well as Job does. You know, we're going to complain about our own suffering. And we may not be able to answer every question someone brings to us because we don't know the backstory. Maybe, yeah, we're going to be more and more conformed to our Savior's image. But right here on earth, right now, we're going to need our humble state of mind.
What did you mean by the difference?
Okay, precision versus accuracy. Okay, here's an example. With my bicycle tire or my car, you need a certain, you know, my car's 33 PSI, my bicycle's 90 PSI, and plus or minus 10%. That's what we need. If you go too low, you have a load, you have a truck, and then your tires can blow out. So there's a certain amount of precision everybody understands, you know. Oh, why did your tire blow out? You didn't check it for 6 months, and it was 30% low. And then when you drove on the freeway, you were speeding, and the tire heated up. So there's precision expected there, and it's also expected with the Bible. When did this happen? And we expect, believing everything did actually happen, that there's going to be a precise date that it happened. Whether we know it or not, I think, is another question. But then, because that's true, we know these things happen. When David was wandering around avoiding Saul, we believe, okay, they happened. And we talk to somebody who might be skeptical, and if we can't give an exact date, it just means we don't know. Or we haven't found out yet. It doesn't necessarily mean it didn't happen. As opposed to, in the tire analogy, if you get a screw in your tire, instead of taking 6 months, it can take 6 days. And pretty soon you drive around and you get a flat. Oh my gosh, how did that happen? And it's more of an accuracy issue. So how that would relate with archaeology is if they can take a find, and it could be you can get things in the wrong layer, and it's going to be really confusing until you unearth more items from different layers, and that I think is going to be a bigger and more difficult problem to figure out.
So precision is like the real story, and then accuracy is how much we know of it. Is that kind of a summation of what you're saying, or?
Well, to sum it up, what I want to present is that every science has that issue, and so I would compare it with astronomy. somebody might debate, okay, is the Earth 5 billion or 4 billion years old? And if they say 4 billion years old and it's 100 years ago, it's like, wow, how did you get so close? Today, okay, maybe you'd expect they'd have a better precision than that, maybe, you know, 5 point something. But if we have a different view of hermeneutics or just a different way of understanding scriptures, and we say, you know, I think it's like 6,400 years old. And then somebody in academia might say, how could you think that, you know? We're talking whether it's 3, 4, 5, 6 billion years old, and you're in the thousands, right? So then there's an accuracy issue there. And so we should look for that in archaeology, just like we look for that in astronomy.
Yeah, and have informed opinions.
Where you can make two kinds of mistakes. One is a precision mistake. If you can't remember like an exact year, it doesn't even matter. It just means you don't have Wikipedia open. But
Wikipedia?
But some things, I've enjoyed to see the rivalry between different evangelical communities, where you get, hey, this is, you know, the Earth's old and the Earth's young. I think it's healthy, right? But in the end, it's an apologetic tool that we're discussing. How do you relate with people, you know, who are going to probably go to a university or have taken classes and have read books like that? Yeah, Pete.
Can I go to the Bible and find like an equation that says this is right? And it's that kind of question that a lot of people pose. Yeah. They have kind of their own construct of what they would expect to find in order to have the Bible be accurate. The Bible is incredible in accuracy, but to our own modern hubris on precision, we expect there to be a nailed down date in the story, and that's not really viable for an ancient document. But if you look at accuracy, you know, for instance, the prophecies of Daniel, he outlines, here's going to be coming the Greek Empire, and then the Romans, and then the Seleucids. And the information that Daniel lays out for the Seleucids, you can't really take all the relationships and the information that he's laid out for you about the coming Seleucid kingdom and fail to match it up in its information content to be accurate in ways about the relationships within the Seleucid Empire of the rulers and the context. And the way that Daniel lays out that information that describes this coming empire matches it exactly. And without giving you specific dates, you know, 540 years hence, there's going to be the Seleucid.
Yeah, so what Pete's bringing up,
the information he gives is terribly accurate. And that's a tool that you should use, because people are expecting date accuracy, and that's not what's there. But when you give up textual accuracy, which the Bible gives in a lot of places, that's the kind of accuracy that's really hard to argue with.
And it goes over the centuries and the millennia. It's accurate. We can see how it's accurate because we tested it with our lives and with, and if they were short on precision because of their measuring tools or even their records, because that's an area we don't even think of these days. We have it right here on the notebook. You know, how are they going to keep records handy? They're going to lose, like, where was this city? Where was that city? There was, you know, a couple thousand years. We didn't know where these cities were until archaeology got back on the scene and started pointing out, hey, this is where these cities were. We've been digging in the ground, and we found some names, and we found some structures. And now we can locate all these cities. But that doesn't mean we understand the backstory. It doesn't mean we understand the Psalms better than our fellow Christians 500 years ago, 1,200 years ago, who didn't have the resources we have today.
But, you know, he's absolutely right. There's people that say, prove God exists.
Yeah.
And they want to see it right in front of them, their eyes, before they accept it.
Yeah, so and that's maybe that will help us whenever we get someone confronting us where, and we'll explain it to them just like we do for ourselves. How do we deal with this stuff? Because we come across it all the time. You know, oh my gosh, you know, they didn't have, if we can understand what somebody who wrote a book 800 years ago said and be humble and say he didn't have the resources we have, then I think we will be able to address other people that say the same thing to us. And now we're going to go on to conspiracies, because I just want to ask, and I want to find, this is what I want to get to. I didn't want it to get to like half past and we hadn't gotten to the best part. So I couldn't get everybody, but I'll start right here. What I have to put it in this way, though. What's your favorite conspiracy? Do you have one off the top of your head?
9/11.
9/11's a good one. What's the conspiracy?
That never happened. We plotted it all. The U.S. plotted it.
That it was someone other than the terrorists, maybe? Or that somebody made it? Okay, JFK, yes. Yes. Okay, so. Basketball, what's that?
They're saying the earth is flat. A lot of the professional basketball.
Oh, it's popular right now.
It's popular right now. Crazy.
Not just tattoos and beards and stuff, but. No, that I think that's a testament to a couple of things. One's our faith. We can believe anything. That's awesome. That our kids have to have that, but we have to have it as adults too. And that's why I think why we have to look at the authority of who's putting out the information. If there's no authority tied to it, we're going to delve into it. Watch out, because our faith is way stronger than we realize. All right, some more conspiracies.
The government's hiding aliens and visiting Earth. That's the one I come in all the time. I work in Hollywood, and I get that almost every week. They came. The government's just hiding it.
How could the alien one last so long? Because I was convinced a while ago that you know, if the stars are so far apart and they're never going to be able to get to us because they can't get through a wormhole without getting destroyed, how do we have 2010 A Space Odyssey? You know, how does it persist? How did these kind of things persist?
Of course, Hugh says, how come the aliens always show up at 3 o'clock in the morning on remote roads? Never in a city during the day. They must be pretty stupid, you know?
Okay, what? Or some more?
Flat Earth. We got to talk about flat Earth.
Okay, you guys want to talk about flat Earth. So, but because when I hear that one, I think, okay, I'm not going to deal with it because it's too simple. But maybe it isn't.
The Apollo program.
Yeah, that's
moon landing.
I don't
really think there's life on the other side of the planet.
They think they did not go to the moon. The whole thing was a setup.
Oh, okay. So you could critique the Apollo landing.
Yeah, it was all done at Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
But that makes sense, right? If you look at our abilities as the film directors, right? They can put something so awesome, right? There's the imagery. I wish I was as good. You know, I could just throw up images and. It really helps understand stuff when you get the imagery. So it's not just scholars who need to sell books and they have to make it exciting. And sometimes, truthfully, they have to challenge the consensus. You have to do that sometimes because the consensus, like lemurs, can just go way too far off an edge somewhere. But we can realize, hey, yeah, it's not just with scholars and it's not just with directors. Of course, politicians and authors of awesome, riveting books that you can't put down.
They're ridiculous.
Dan Brown's conspiracy that Christianity was a construct in the third century.
Right? Yeah, the authors, Jan Brown. Okay, there you go, Dan Brown.
So you got to try all things and hold on to what's good, right? Test all things, like the Bible says. Yeah. Prove all things.
Yes.
I wanted to answer another question that was asked about David. What evidence is there for David? Mark did mention one data point of two. There is a steel that references the house of David. I believe that's called the Dan steel. There's also now a second steel regarding. It's an archaeological term.
Stone.
And it's not literal.
Spelled
steel.
STEL.
Yeah, STEL. And now there's a second one referencing David. There's also a third steel called I remember the name right, the Menetep. That references Israel as a nation, and the date of that stele is 1200. Therefore, that puts in great doubt, talking to a skeptic, you would say, that puts in great doubt your thoughts that Israel only began in the 1200s, and you already have a reference to the nation of Israel. The two don't jive. So
that's right. Some of the more convincing articles I've come across in these last couple months have been showing how does the growth of a nation even look like? And so the Bible shows us, hey, this is how it grew. And then how do we find that in archaeology? Some things are going to be easier to find than others, but certainly a mention of a nation that early shows, okay, well, at 12 centuries before Christ, something was going on already. Okay, so nobody mentioned Santa or the Easter Bunny. Bigfoot, yeah. I was surprised. Nobody mentioned Bigfoot. I hear that one quite a bit because, you know, when you're out in the woods and it's dark. Ghosts. Okay, so that ghost is a good one. And then I'll say our next slide has Isaiah 8, so I'll save that for that.
Satan enters some of these theories, right?
Okay, so what job does Satan have? To corrupt us as the chief conspirator.
He's a deceiver.
Yeah, that's one of his names. So one of his names might be, chief of conspiracies. And it might sound silly sometimes talking to somebody, you know, oh, are you academic? You know, have you ever read a book? And you bring up Satan, you know? It depends on the person. So if we're with somebody who's, hey, let's just talk about the facts and reference a book once in a while, no need to bring it up. But if you talk to somebody who starts to bring up, you know, ghosts or aliens, then all of a sudden, I think it is appropriate. Hey, don't you know that, you know, the chief of conspiracies is going to throw out all kinds of crazy, strange stuff that's hard to explain?
Well, Hugh brings up Satan when he's talking about UFOs and stuff, right?
Yeah. So for UFOs, it is interesting that, 95% of the stuff might be explainable, according to some research that Hugh was involved with, and he'd have to say, 5%, we couldn't find a cause. And it's not a surprise if you think many people are going to be deluded in various ways. And as a Christian, you'd have to admit, even supernaturally, there's causes that are dark and happen at night or on an excluded road. Yes?
Okay, we know biblically that Satan is the chief liar. You know, he tells us truth, but I don't recall him being called a conspirator in the Bible, is he?
No.
So are we extending this idea that he's a liar to that he's a conspirator? I mean, we can certainly understand that he would be a conspirator, but...
Okay, so I'll just go to the next slide. Well, we have Isaiah 8, and I'll read some of it out loud. Starting with verse, 11. For the Lord spoke thus to me with his strong hand upon me and warned me not to walk in the way of this people, saying, do not call conspiracy all that this people calls conspiracy, and do not fear what they fear, nor be in dread. But the Lord of hosts, him you shall honor as holy. Let him be your fear, and let him be your dread. I did a search and said, I want to see where conspiracy comes up. And it comes up in an awesome part of Isaiah, especially because in 9, you know, you really get on into the evangelical message.
So that's Isaiah 8, right?
Yeah, so it starts in 8 at 11. And just to give context, I have more around it. Some of the more interesting stories when King Saul, you know, addresses somebody who's going to channel, the deceased Samuel. That's very strange stuff. But it shouldn't surprise if people are gonna end up getting their advice from authorities that we wouldn't want to trust. So yes.
As a deceiver. I mean, that's what conspiracies generally do. They obfuscate, confuse, draw people way off track.
And the conspiracies confuse in a big way, right? So when someone says, oh, Satan did it, and all you did was break your pencil lead, you know, not so great. But when it's this thing where you see, like, the whole nation can get deceived, you know? Or the king is deceived, well, that's horrible. He's like the chief. And he gets deceived. So
look how Satan was involved with Judas, that conspiracy, right? That killed Christ. Satan was involved in that. Satan possessed.
And if you do a search for conspiracy, you can see it come up in different areas. You know, when is it used specifically, like Absalom conspiring against David. And then... Yeah, okay, whether it's Satan or not, I think, yeah, if it's huge, if it's big picture stuff and, like, millions of people are buying into it, okay, well, there you go. You have the chief enemy who is causing the conspiracy. It's not, like, a minor thing. And so if we're out, it doesn't matter if it's astronomy or archaeology and someone's throwing us difficult questions and we can't answer it, of course, right? These are, they're not posed from, you know, a silly standpoint, right? They may seem silly to us sometimes, a flat earth that seems silly, but it's not there are some very tricky lines of thought that I personally think, yeah, man alone can't just use his brain and calculate and figure it out, right? We work as a fellowship, everyone among us has different gifts, we're going to contribute differently. And as a team, the Holy Spirit's going to use us as part of the plan to defeat the enemy in various ways, beautifully.
You know, once in a while, it's good that Dr. Ross is not here, because then we could, like, brainstorm sometimes about helping each other.
Yeah, okay, so I like that. And how Mark wants people to say, hey, I have an idea and I want to spend, you know, some minutes in the class bringing up something that wasn't touched upon, that we all contribute some, it fires us up to, like, get more involved and look at the, like, going to reasons.org can be overwhelming because there's so many resources. You can spend an hour and make 1% progress through it.
Started talking about the Comey hearing, okay? And he was saying one thing, and I was saying just about the opposite. And she said it was very sad because I realized that we have nothing to say to each other anymore without getting really heated in an argument. And she said that's the thing that really frightens me as an American. Because are we to the point where there is an impasse because of the things that we believe from conspiracies, perhaps, that have just literally cut us off from half the other half of the population in America? And how can we get back on track so we can have dialogue, so we can talk about facts?
Yeah, it's difficult to even keep it to the facts. It doesn't matter if it's a friend or just an acquaintance at the park. Our emotions get involved, and that is part of it. Not just, you know, liking to hold a certain position, but also fear of not knowing and various other things. Okay, so faith in, we have the scriptures. It's awesome to have such a great guidebook. And they're the same scriptures that we've had. It's a different science than archaeology, but you know what the critical work that's been done. They're the same scriptures we've had for 3,000 years if you're reading the old stories, and an amazing resource. Okay, the final slide, though, I just wanted to bring that up. Okay. Which is the first written language? Because the archaeologists, right, they're uncovering potsherds with very ancient stuff on them. You know, a whole papyrus, it's not as easy to find, so there's less. What's the most ancient language?
According to radio station WPAT in Paterson, New Jersey, there's a program that's on Tuesdays from 6 our time to 7 our time, which is 9 to 10 their time. It's called the Lithuanian Hour, the Lithuanian American Hour, and they claim that Lithuanian is the first written language.
And it may be, you know, it's tough, right? Because what's the first language versus first written language? Automatically there's a bias towards Egypt because they're using huge stone works and it's in the middle of the desert, so stuff doesn't even decompose too much. And then the next question is, which is the first alphabetic written language? So this isn't hieroglyphs. Who's the first? Who are the first to get beyond that, to get into the alphabet?
Phoenicians.
Phoenicians, that's most generally held to be true.
You mean cuneiform handwriting?
Which is similar to what we're using today. But recently, because I just wanted to throw one recent thing out there, here's Douglas Petrovich, the world's oldest alphabet. And he's bringing up that it's actually Hebrew. And, right, the Phoenicians, the Hebrew, they're right in the midst there where they're going to have to do trade deals and they're going to have to do all sorts of stuff and get something that works in a lot of different countries. And maybe that's why God put these people there. All right, what's the difference in H2O and water?
It's
one's like a molecular formula, and one's what we want when we're thirsty.
Yes.
So I wanted to bring it up because it's awesome that we have so much technology, and we can go back to the principles, and we could look into, wow, it's hydrogen and oxygen comes together, makes water. How surprising! They didn't know that a long time ago. They didn't know much about life. They didn't know that that's what it was made out of. But wow, we are finding out a lot. In astronomy, you can see how hydrogen is the most abundant, and water of all elements is very abundant. And then, so of course, there's going to be a ton of water out there. But still, in life, it's water that we're talking about most of the time. And if you try to like go back to hydrogen and oxygen, it can get more confusing. And so this book just came out. I don't even have a copy yet. When people start to bring up ancient languages and letters and what they mean, it can be confusing because it's a different science to figure out which is the ancient languages and where do they travel and how are they formed, and like hermeneutics. You know, what does a word mean? That one too. Hermeneutics is a great, you know, we all use it to some extent. How do you decipher the text, or how do you decipher what someone says? Where's the sentence, and where's the phrase, and where's the word? And do you look at the whole chapter and what it means, or do you just look at a single part of it? And even more so in archaeology, that's going to happen. You just take these little, tiny little evidences, and you can get, you know, sometimes it's just the new science that came out, the radar detection, what they found, and then we can get overwhelmed. So that's just a word of warning as we close. There's so much out there, we've got to be humble. And watch out, because the other guy might be right. So let's find out if he has faults and he said something wrong. Maybe that's just part of the discussion, but maybe there's something to learn there. And I enjoyed this. Time to move on, so we're going to close in prayer right now. Half past. Lord, thank you for these moments that we have to get together in fellowship and look at your word, how it relates to life, how it relates to science, because it's such an exciting time. The science that you have presented to us throughout the millennia seems to be progressing, and we love to use every tool you give us, apologetics tools, all of your gifts that we go out to the world and bring what we hear in sermons every week and what we hear in Bible studies. We praise your name. In Jesus Christ, we pray. Amen.